This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Not just understandable, I thought it was predictable.
Yeah. And that, I think that's part of the carryover.
All right, we got a busy second hour. Chris Harrington, then Fish on Friday on Tuesday. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is TSOP, a.k.a. The Sound of Philadelphia, by MFSB, and I can't remember what that stands for, from the Philly Soul era, early 70s, mid-70s, in honor of the guests in Memphis tonight, the Philadelphia 76ers.
76ers are in town, and Jokic is a separate question we'll get to. Embiid is questionable. Tell me about the Sixers.
They're an interesting team. They seem to be in a sort of transition, although the older guys are still there, you know, in Paul George and Embiid. They're not as prominent or as reliable. It's really become a Tyrese Maxey, VJ Edgecombe team. Maxey is playing at an all-NBA level. He's averaging more than 30 points a game, one of the most dynamic guards in basketball, one of the leading scorers in the league. And VJ Edgecombe has been, you know, probably maybe the third best rookie, somewhere in that 3, 4, 5, 6 range of the rookies behind Cooper Flagg and Con Knipl, probably. And so they have a dynamic athletic backcourt in Maxey and Edgecombe, and the rest of the team is a little bit of a mixed bag around them, really.
And obviously for the Grizzlies, no Zach Edey, and so that could present...
No lots of people.
Yeah. No lots of people. No 8 people we've discussed. Jock Landale is questionable. Yeah. But they do have Ja, and they do have Jaren, and... they have, I guess, Cedric Howard, although who knows what his restrictions will be. Where, by the way, is he now? Is he borderline first-team rookie at this point, Cedric Howard?
Yeah, I listened to some pod over the holiday where they were doing the first-team rookie, and it was debatable. He was one of 3 players being discussed for the 5th spot, basically. I sort of feel like they were too aggressive in giving Derek Queen the 4th spot out of New Orleans.
Right.
But basically, you could go 4, 5, 6, 7 on the rookie class, and he's in a mix of players in those spots, along with Derek Queen, San Antonio's Dylan Harper, and someone I'm forgetting.
So the ones
the top 3 consensus were Cooper Flagg, Con Knipl, and B.J. Edgecombe.
Right, exactly. And then Queen was their aggressive, the one that they gave as 4th, and then they have this good rookie class. By the way, you have a piece up that we discussed yesterday on Ja Morant, his future, the decisions that have to be made ultimately around Ja Morant. I'd urge people to go read that for themselves over at the Daily Memphian. Really, we discussed most of the things you touched on, at least a lot of the issues you brought up in the piece yesterday. And so I'll let people go read that for themselves. A couple things, though, that you did after that in the piece, there's some trends. You were wondering whether they were trends or a blip. You were discussing whether these things were trends or a blip. One was Jaren, Jaron's fine play seems like a trend now, right?
Yeah, it's a trend, but like things go up and down over the course of the season. And players have good periods and bad periods, and just because he's been in a good period doesn't mean there's not a bad period around the corner. But it's a trend because this is true level of ability, right? I mean, this is what this guy was doing last year before he had the ankle injury late in the season, and then the coaching change, and he sort of faded. And everyone thought, middle of last year, everyone thought he was going to be second team all NBA. And then by the end, he just barely missed third team all NBA and probably cost himself a lot of money. But he was in that all NBA range last year. And what we've seen the last, you know, seven games basically is him, again, not every second of every game. He faded it late in that Washington game, but especially in the games they won, he's been awesome. You've seen him putting both parts of it together. You've seen the all NBA defensive play he established first. And then you've seen the go-to scoring offense he's established after that. And it's been sort of a trick to have both those things revved up at the same time. I think that's a lot to ask. But he's basically been doing that the last week or two.
Another was Gigi. He obviously, over the break, re-entered the rotation. Thoughts on what you've seen from Gigi and what his future may hold?
I think he's played well. I think there's a bit of a blip to that in terms of the volume of steals he's generated. I mean, he had four steals, I think, in the game against Washington, and he happened to be on the floor during that 19-0 run, and he contributed to that greatly, generating those steals. I don't know if anyone should expect that to continue necessarily, but I think he has been selective on offense. You know, he's taking open threes when they come to him. He's driving aggressively when he sees open lanes. He's not forcing a lot of shots. There's not been a lot of three dribble, contested pull up kind of stuff from him. I think he's playing, you know, within the offense and taking the opportunities that are there. And I think defensively, I think he has some limitations both physically and in terms of court awareness. But I think the effort has been there defensively, and that is you know, shown in the results. And I think it's been a good, you know, I want to be cautiously optimistic about it. This is four games coming off the bench, three coming off the bench, one as a starter. But it's been the opportunity presented itself with some of these new injuries, and he has taken advantage of it. And I think it's been very good.
And then Koloko, obviously on a 10-day. Thoughts on what we've seen from him?
He's interesting. When I ask you, is he a keeper? I mean, for this season, you know, I'm not talking about a long-term thing,
right?
But given the eating uncertainty, given the even deeper, I think, uncertainty about Brandon Clark for the rest of this season, and now sort of Lando being out, I think there's a need for another big, especially because they seem to want to play big. They don't seem to want to scale down with Isolo in particular. I don't think he wants to scale down. I think he wants to be big. And so I think, you know, Koloko is someone who's shown that he can come in and play. He's a lob target. He's a good defensive player. He is very, very limited.
Right.
You know, in some ways, he's very different from Jock Landale. He's not going to take a three. He's not quite as physical, but he's a little bit springier. And so, you know, he can finish lobs. He can get out in transition. He's a good defensive player, more versatile defensive player, I think, than Charles Bassey, who they had in earlier, who was a better rebounder. And he's a guy they seem to have a lot of comfort with. I suspect, I don't know this, this is just my guesswork, I suspect that after tonight, this will be the last game on his current 10-day, given their injury situation, I suspect they'll still be eligible for a hardship exception. I would suspect they would sign him to a second 10-day, and then they could string it out a little bit longer. One thing that's interesting about him is that he does have two-way eligibility. Now, I don't know how you would do that. You know, are you going to cut Omax Prosper, who I think has also been good, for Koloko?
Right.
Maybe you would if you just think Koloko has more utility for you positionally. That could be the case. So then you have the Jemai Meshack thing. And, I mean, in the absence of anything else, I would say they rushed it, putting him on a two-way. But I don't know what their understanding was. That may have been an understanding with the agent on the front end that was going to happen. So I don't want to say, like, you know, they shouldn't have done that, or maybe you cut him to make room for this guy. There may be... And I don't know, but it's quite possible there's just an understanding on that subject. So, but Koloko does have two-way eligibility, and that leaves them some stuff to sort through.
All right, and then the other thing I want to talk about, obviously, Jokic, an ominous-looking injury last night. He's having another crazy season, leading the league in rebounding and assists while scoring 29.9 points a game, We haven't had information yet. If he were to be out with an ACL or something, another. I mean, Denver games would no longer be interesting. I mean, and we already have this sort of problem throughout the league of all these stars missing all of this time, and I don't. Yep. I don't know that there's an answer. Like, who knows? Like, what if they'd played 72 games? Go ahead.
The weird thing, and we talk about this stuff all the time, and I don't know if anyone has an obvious answer to it, although there is one obvious thing. How much it would solve, I don't know, reducing the number of games. But it's weird that – it's not weird. It's notable to me. The NBA put out something about all these potential complicated things they may do to address the tanking issue. And I don't know that the tanking issue is that big of an issue. I think the injury issue is the issue. I think the injury issue is
much bigger issue. Much bigger
issue. Games, much more. You talk about tanking, but like I just saw the Grizzlies lose to the Wizards twice. You know, I just watched the Timberwolves lose to the Nets. I just watched the Jazz go into San Antonio and win in San Antonio. I don't see evidence, and it'll change later in the season to some degree, but I don't see evidence of like teams just going out of their way to tank. Some teams are bad, and that's just the way it works in a zero-sum game. And some teams like do things that are with an eye of a 2 or 3 year arc because that's how you have to build a team. I think the tanking thing is overrated as a problem. I think the injury thing is a big problem.
I agree completely. I mean, and the tanking thing isn't, by the way, that like we've been doing this for 10 or 15 years or whatever. The injury thing, when you feel like you should be watching a star and you're not because they're hurt, like that is right. that guts the essence of it. With a bad team is playing even worse than you thought, but whatever. That's like at the end of a season. Right. I just think I completely agree with you. The real PR, but isn't the reason that they focus on one and not the other? Is there something that they might do or could do about tanking where there's nothing they're willing to do about the injury?
I just think a lot of people think of not being willing to reduce the schedule is wrongheaded. And I'm not saying that immediately fixes all the injury problems. It does not. But I think it helps it to some degree.
It clearly helps it. Right.
Yeah, and from you think about this from a Grizzlies perspective, like that's the agonizing thing about this season a little bit. Is that you've seen enough, at least I've seen enough, where you can see how the pieces could come together for this team, not to make them the Thunder or whatever, but to make them a good team, like a real competitive playoff team. The pieces are there for that to happen, and it's this thing where you're like, you know, you hang around and hope to get healthy. That's what it's been from the jump. That's still what it is, but like that hope is hard to muster, you know? It's just so constant.
No, I agree. And if you were to cut the season, down to 70 games, 72, whatever, 70, two things. A, there'd just be fewer opportunities to be hurt, period, right? That would be the one. Right. Obviously, it's still practice in between games, but it's a different level of intensity.
When you're monitoring workload, and you pull guys off of practice to monitor to reduce workload, fans don't see that and don't care.
When
you do that in a game, like fans see that and care.
The other advantage is that the games can be better spaced, and so you don't have you won't have these situations, the load management stuff or whatever, and you'd presumably be able to better foster good health, in addition to just fewer opportunities. They're just unwilling to do it, and so that's why they focus on tanking, which I agree. In terms of the tanking stuff, though. Do you have, forget the tanking, the lottery. Do you have problems with the lottery? Do you like the lottery the way it is? What would you do with the lottery?
I've come up with my ideas. I don't know if my ideas are good. I think any idea you come up with, there's going to be some unintended consequence that you don't foresee. That always happens. I honestly think it's not a problem. I think the last tweaks they made seem like they've been pretty good. And you could fiddle with it endlessly. You could fiddle with it because it's such an elaborate thing already. You could just fiddle with it, you know, till the end of time. I think it's fine. I don't think it needs correction. I think it's probably fine the way it is.
My son Peter's favorite suggestion is he thinks the lottery should be determined over a period of years. In other words, if you have one crappy year, you shouldn't be, you know, that you're trying to reward the actually bad teams, not the teams that had a had a bye year of some type. Now, that would be incredibly complicated to do it. The other thing, people want to limit. I'll say this. The Spurs are infuriating. I'll start with that.
Yep.
I'll start with that. Like, even forget Wemby. The Wemby year, they were tied for the most best worst odds in the league at 14% because they were third from the worst, and they moved from 3-1. Okay, so that's right. Infuriating. But there, they were legitimately an awful team, and so that's fine. But then, in addition, the next 2 years, they move up for Stephon Castle and for Dylan Harper. Each of these last, like, they have just like this monster team that they've built has been totally luck. It's not been good management. It's just been luck.
Right.
And that's infuriating.
I think one of the suggestions that people made is like you can't be in the top whatever in back-to-back years. I don't love that. But if you want to make it like you can't do it 3 years in a row, maybe I could get with that a little bit better. You know, I think part of building a team when you're bad is like stacking up, you know,
consecutive picks. Classes I mean, of good picks. Yeah,
yeah. Right, exactly. I mean, the Grizzlies got in one of those years. I mean, one of the years they got lucky and jumped up, but they would have been in the top 10 regardless. But the Grizzlies got Jared and John back to back top fives, you know, and maybe this period has not been as good as people wanted it to be, but you've still been in the playoffs multiple times with it, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't want you wouldn't want to say just because you. I mean, what happens if you're in? What happens if you win the lottery and it's Alex Saar year and instead of a Wemby year, you're excluded? That seems...
This is the problem. Any idea you want to come up with, if you really start gaming it out, you're going to have all kinds of problems with it. Right. All kinds of problems. That's why I just think it's probably fine the way it is.
All right.
I think if anything, all the attempts to fix it are just drawing more attention to, like, you know, or doing more to give people the idea that there's a problem that's bigger than the problem itself, which is probably bad for your product.
Right. That makes sense.
We haven't even gotten into the Thunder having a top five pick right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. All right. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Grizzlies tonight at FedEx Forum, Sixers, and that game is on NBC. Should be a lot of fun. We're going to take a break. We got Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. It's Jeff Calkinshaw, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C. Charles, of course, is the author of how many New York Times bestsellers?
Three New York Times bestsellers. Three, four, depends on how you count. Lots of New York Times bestsellers.
Lots of them. Just
you can
constant.
Use your gift card. You can use your Amazon or Barnes & Noble gift card to go buy One Giant Leap, which will change the way you think about what you can accomplish in the world.
In 2026.
You went to the moon. Whoever you are listening, you got us to
anyway,
the moon.
Let me finish. Three New York Times bestsellers, also a three-time winner of the George Earl Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing, and retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand, joins us from Washington, D.C. He is Charles Fishman.
For the last
Fishman.
Fish on Friday, on Tuesday of 2025.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, that's great. You want to wrap up the year? That's you want to wrap up the year. I heard last. It's funny. Last week I was out. You weren't when I you went ahead anyway. You're nothing if not loyal to the program.
I'm diligent. I have a good work ethic.
They wanted you to do a rap. They wanted you to do a year long rap, and I'm out there screaming, "You can't do a rap. It's not wrapped yet. We're not ready to rap. We're ready. We're still." This is, if we were to do a wrap, it would be this year. And instead, you send me a list. This was an interesting thing you sent me. Things that Americans in 1998, when you asked Americans in 1998, whether these things would happen by 25. 2025. Whether they would or would not happen. And I have to say, looking at the list of things, Americans in 98... we're pretty good at guessing whether something would or wouldn't happen.
Yeah, there were 18 things. Americans didn't get to predict just randomly in this poll what they thought would happen by 2025.
No.
Gallup did a very careful poll, and they offered 18 statements or predictions of things that might be true.
And you say yes or no.
1998 right. And 2025. And you say, yes, I think that will happen. No, I don't think it will happen. Hang on one second. Thinking about 2025 and 1998 uh-huh. is like imagining what the world will be like in 2052.
Right.
2052 feels
distant.
A long way away.
You know, it feels like we might not be doing this radio show.
If in 2052, you and I will both be over 90.
That is going to be a humdinger of a segment. You know,
people, it's going to be a humdinger.
People are going to love that. Calkins and Fishman yelling at each other. And this time we won't be able to hear each other either.
If you think the ratio of tussling and crankiness is high now, just wait till we're 91.
All right, so here's some of the things.
Let me run the segment.
What?
Just be quiet for a minute. Okay. Here's how far away it is. Even if you're born in 2030, you will have graduated from college, most likely in 2052.
Right.
2052 is far away.
Feels like you're it's funny they were not asked about flying cars, though. They were
thank
not.
Thank God. Flying cars is the stupidest thing in the world. Americans
why is
can't
it so
manage
stupid?
Their regular cars. You really want to put those people in the air? Never. Never. It's never.
You're, okay, here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen.
The emergence.
An absolutely
stupid
unequivocal
idea.
Prediction.
Stupid idea. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Ordinary people will never have flying cars in the United States of America.
The emergence of a deadly new disease.
Don't do this. Don't go through them. Let's pick the interesting one.
What do you think I'm doing? I'm picking an interesting one.
Okay.
I'm picking an interesting one. You can pick your interesting ones. Well, let's alternate. Okay. The emergence of a deadly new disease. In 98, Americans were 75% of Americans said, yes, we'll have one. They nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. I'm impressed.
To me, that's stupid because there's always going to be the emergence of a new disease.
Okay, you pick
just
one.
Been,
which one do you think is interesting?
Just been through AIDS, and so it was on people's minds.
Okay.
I liked illicit drug use such as marijuana and cocaine will be commonplace. I didn't like the way it was phrased, but here we are in 2025. You can have marijuana delivered to your house. So I don't know about the illicit
And
part,
Americans knew that. Americans said 64% of Americans at the time. Here's one of the interesting things. Here's a pair that were interesting to me. They were asked in 98 if AIDS would be cured and if cancer would be cured. And they said 60% were confident that AIDS would be cured and 59% that cancer would be cured. Now, that's silly because one is a single disease and one is a whole cluster of diseases. But they were confident. In 98, they thought we'd be done with cancer and done with AIDS. And the truth is we are largely done with AIDS. Like as a
AIDS, I don't think they refer to AIDS as cure.
No,
but it is completely treatable. You live a
absolutely.
Normal life.
Whereas cancer, 100% not cured. People right. are disappointed. Those 98 people were 98 were disappointed. What else do you find interesting? In
hang
this?
On. I would say the thing that's interesting about cancer is that there are cancers that were absolutely devastating in 1998 that have become manageable and we are still on the hunt. So, gay marriage will be commonplace. Gay marriage wasn't legal in 1998. 74% thought gay marriage would be commonplace. It is. In the entire country, there's no differentiation between straight marriage and gay marriage. If you want to go get married, you know what? We should bless people who want to partner up in love. So that was impressive to me. The country will have elected a black president. 69% said that would happen. We did. It took another, you know, whatever, 15 years.
66% said that. Oh, 66% said woman president, and they were wrong about that.
66% said there would be a woman. So fewer people thought. In 1998, more people thought we would elect a black president first, and they were right, and we still have not elected a woman president. Do you want to pick one, or you want me to
pick
one?
I like this one. Some ways people were too confident. People will routinely live to be 100 years old. In 98, Americans thought, 61% of Americans thought people would routinely live to be 100 years old. That is not true. In fact, it's descending, I think, the average life expectancy. So we got that one wrong.
Right. That is true. Life expectancy since 1998. In 1998, if you were born in 1998, you could expect to live 76.7 years. Now it's 78.4 years, so it's gone up about a year. But you and I both know that today, if you live to 60, the chances of you living to 90 have dramatically increased. And so yes, it's interesting. That hasn't happened. Let's look for a minute, and then we can move on.
I'll give you one more. Go ahead.
Well,
I'm done with interesting ones. Yes.
The things we got right by saying they wouldn't happen.
Oh, okay.
Will humans routinely be cloned by 2025? No. 60% said no. Will space travel be available to ordinary Americans by 2025? 69% said no. That's true. Will humans have made or received contact with aliens? The UFOs are everywhere, aren't they? Even in the polls. In 1998, 68% of Americans said no, we won't have done that. We won't have made.
Okay, let me put a little twist on this. Okay, I am now going to ask you. I'm George Gallup, and you are the ordinary American, and more objectionable than a lot, but still the ordinary American. I'm going to ask you these questions. By what are we saying? It is 2052. Okay, I'm going to ask you these same questions. Americans knew in 98 that these would not happen by 26 or 25. I'm going to ask you, will these things happen by 52? Here we are. Ready? Cars will largely be replaced by mass transportation.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
I think the key there is largely no, but I think
okay.
In
cars, let me
car
gasoline
on.
Cars will largely replace by electric cars.
In 2052, the cars will probably all be electric. There will be no internal combustion,
and they'll be self driving.
And they will be self driving.
Okay, cloning
way,
of cute.
By the way, just the way our elevators are self driving.
That's a trickier. It's a more complicated thing. An elevator only has to negotiate a shaft. Cloning of humans will be commonplace by 2052.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
No,
never
happen. Okay. Most people will be self employed by 2052.
I don't think so. No.
Space travel will be common for ordinary Americans in 2052.
In 2052, you will be able to travel to space as an ordinary American if you want to. You'll go for tourism or because you're working in an orbital lab or an orbital factory.
But not common.
Because there won't necessarily be, like, air travel is common today because people want to go from Louisville to Orlando, right? So I think it'll be accessible, but not.
They don't really want to go from Orlando to Louisville, though, in fairness. Humans will have made contact with alien life forms.
I hope somebody's keeping track of my prediction.
We're going to check back in 2052.
Absolutely not.
Jeffrey has it written down. He's going to be.
Not going to happen. Okay. And Jeffrey will only be like 50 in 2052.
Exactly right. Jeffrey will still be having kids. Okay, we got to move on. You want to discuss what we got wrong this year. That seems like an unpleasant topic to me. Let's skip that one.
Well, I only had time. I don't have a year wrap. Maybe we can do the year wrap in the first Fish on Friday in 2026. But one thing we got wrong that we talked about.
And when we say
lot,
we mean you.
You claim credit for the victories and you just claim credit for
way to do it.
For the failures. Right. Exactly. That's what it means to be the host.
Right.
That's just good coaching.
Just good coaching. Yep. Go ahead.
Good coaching. Exactly right. The victories are the coaches.
Failure is an orphan. Failure is an orphan.
Failures, people not doing what they should. We talked a lot about tariffs, and we got two big things wrong about the tariffs.
Okay.
One thing we got wrong was that who was going to pay, right? Who was going to pay for the tariffs?
Okay.
In actual practical legal terms, it's very clear who pays the tariffs that Donald Trump imposed, took back. The U.S. Customs Service bills the U.S. company importing the goods. They send you a bill, you send them money, then you get your goods.
Technically, that is who pays the tariff.
So the U.S. company bringing the merchandise into the U.S. literally pays the tariff. But that's not who pays. They can get a discount from the company that they're buying the products from. They can then pass on the cost to their own consumers. There have been a lot of efforts to figure this out since tariff day, you know, in the middle of April, whatever it was, April 8th to now. And the current state of play is that consumers only pay about a third of the cost of the tariffs. The company importing the products, like Costco, like Walmart, like Ford, is eating about a third of the cost of the tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they have managed to persuade the suppliers, whoever is selling them the goods, to eat about a third of the cost of the tariffs. So inflation hasn't gone down this year, but it did not take off as we thought it might because tariffs increased the cost of things. And part of that is because companies have been good at distributing the cost of these tariffs so that everybody ends up eating a little bit.
Right. Okay.
And so that was one thing we got wrong.
I promised the people that you would have.
Can we say the second thing that we got wrong?
Sure.
You're not even listening to your own.
No. I have a list here. What did we get wrong this year? And there's only one thing listed underneath it. So that's why I had moved on.
I just said there's two things. China was supposed to be crippled by this. Like, we're their major target of exports. We're going to impose tariffs. It's going to just brutalize their factories. They're going to be on their knees. They're going to want to negotiate. This year, the year 2025, China's trade surplus has soared. All-time record exports by China, $1 trillion in surplus. That's just the surplus.
To the U.S. or is that to other places where they ship stuff?
It's everywhere else in the world. Their exports grew 5.4%. This year. Remember that the U.S. economy in the third quarter grew by 4%, and we were cheering. Their exports grew by 5%, and their surplus is up 21%. So they're selling much more than they were ever before and before the tariffs, and they are and they're making money doing it. And the exports to the U.S. have fallen specifically, but they're selling to the rest of the world because the rest of the world is doing pretty well, and because they are managing their, they're managing their prices and their currency to make Chinese merchandise continue to be really appealing. So those are two things we got wrong. it'll be interesting to see what 2026 brings. But if there's no new dramatic tariff news, then we're living in the world as it is. But you know what might happen in the next week or two, of course, is the Supreme Court might declare the tariffs unconstitutional.
Stay tuned, people. Stay tuned. Okay. I told people that we were going to have advice from you here in a little bit, and I'm going to get to that. I want to make sure we make, because I promised at the top of the show that that you would give them some advice for 2026, since this is the last show of 2025. Before then, I did see the news that Jim Beam had idled its flagship, shut down its distillery for a year. And I don't know if this is related to the story you have previous to it, the fall in U.S. alcohol consumption.
Are related.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's happening? Are we not drinking whiskey? Yeah.
This is crazy. Jim Beam, they haven't done it yet. Jim Beam is shutting down its flagship major distillery in Claremont, Kentucky, that produces 8 million gallons of whiskey a year. That is more than 100,000 gallons of whiskey a week. That's crazy. And it has announced that it is shutting it down for a whole year. It produces a third of the company's whiskey because there's no demand. So they've taken their – it's like Ford announcing they're shutting down a third of their
– But isn't one reason there's no demand – and I read a story about this – that there had been a huge boom in whiskey production, and so stored in barrels.
A huge boom in whiskey consumption.
Right, and whiskey production. And so they built up a lot more. People started a lot more to meet it, and the consumption has fallen off, and we have all these barrels filled of whiskey that we got to get rid of.
Well, and right, the whiskey has a certain lead time, and you can look ahead and say, we have enough. Whiskey consumption has fallen, suburban consumption has fallen something like 10 to 20%. And actually a bunch of distilleries have done just what Jim Beam is doing. Overall alcohol sales of everything, beer, wine, and spirits, this year, remember, economy growing somewhere between 3 and 4%. Alcohol sales have fallen 5%.
Wow.
So that's kind of interesting. And so Jim Beam hasn't said what it's going to do with the employees at that facility. Presumably it will try and find work for them. Being a distiller, you know, involves skill. And presumably also they will only turn this distillery back on in January 2027 if the demand picks up. But when a company of that kind of significance, prestige, ability to look ahead, shuts down their main production facility for a year, you know things are changing, and that's the next story. The next story is overall Americans drinking is at an all-time low. That's the connection.
I thought you just said that. I thought you just said it was down 5%.
Talk about it. It's amazing. Gallup has been polling Americans about their alcohol consumption since 1939, 90 years. And this year is the lowest alcohol consumption in history. Only 54% of Americans say they drink at all. 46% of Americans say they simply don't drink alcohol. That's kind of amazing. In the last week, they were polled, have you had a drink in the last week? Only 40% of those polled said they had no alcohol at all in the previous week or longer. In the last 24 hours, only 24% of adults polled. Only 1 in 4 adults said they had a drink in the last hour. So that's kind of amazing. Couple of interesting stats. 54% of Americans say they do sometimes drink at some point. Women, it's 51%. So women, it's almost even. Half of women in America say they simply never drink alcohol. Men, 57% say they do drink at some point. To me, the most interesting stat was income. I think there's some kind of presumption that lower income people might drink more. In fact, according to, now this is all self-reported, but it's so many years of data. That and it matches what's happening in the market. Those with incomes under 100,000, only 54% say they ever take a drink, and that the lower the income, it falls all the way down to 39% say they take a drink at 30,000 in income and under. So The less money you make, the less likely you are to drink. Those over 100,000, 66% say they still drink.
So I am now going to move us. I'm finally going to wrest control of this segment that has gone completely off the You just will not be quiet, even to the end of 2025. I promise people willpower. I promise people something about advice, and now I want you to tell them what we've learned about willpower.
Well, this was a great. This was actually we could put this column. Jeffrey could X this column out, send this column out. This was really a great column. A distinguished psychologist and author named Angela Duckworth, author of the famous book you may have heard of called Grit, how to teach, you know, the skill you need to teach your kids is stick-to-itiveness as opposed to brilliance, has gotten fascinated with the question of willpower. We flog ourselves for not staying on our diet, not exercising, not going to the gym, not, you know, whatever, working harder, not saving enough, spending too much. And especially at this time of year when there's, you know, sweets and treats and hors d'oeuvres everywhere and people are talking about, am I going to join the gym? Am I not going to, you know, we think willpower is the key. And if I can't do what I'm supposed to do, as she says, the advice is just try harder. And she said, the research now shows that willpower is wildly overrated. That telling people to try harder is just the wrong advice. She said, you need to do something different. And what she describes is you need to put yourself in a setting where you don't need willpower. Now, you and I talk about this all the time because we're always trying to exercise and always trying to get our work done and all that. And you have yourself a brilliant technique. You and Claire don't keep potato chips and tortilla chips.
Never keep anything that I actually want to eat in the house because then I'll eat it.
If it's not there, you don't eat it. And that's exactly the advice Angela Duckworth gives. If you're trying to do something, don't put yourself in the way of temptation and then criticize yourself for failing in the face of that temptation. There's a great study. I don't think she did that. I don't know whether she did the study or not, but they studied high school students and they literally asked them where they put their phone when they were doing their homework or studying for class. And the academic performance, the grades of these hundreds of students who were polled and studied, the farther the phone was away from the child, the better their academic performance. On the table next to me, on a dresser just away from my table, in a different room, in my bedroom while I study in the kitchen, the farther the phone was away, the better their grades. Well, guess what? The phone is the wrong thing to have
so
available.
So what other examples beyond not buying Fritos if you don't want to eat Fritos or not having the – is there other examples of how people can – like, okay, you don't need willpower. What you need to do is to arrange your life such that you don't have to exercise willpower. I'm trying to think of other ways where that would be –
is you make it easier for yourself to do the right thing. So if you want to go to the gym, arrange your fitness clothes the night before – so that you're sort of reminded and incentivized, like, there it is. There's my, I'm all set up. I don't have to go searching for the socks and the shoes. And, you know, sometimes while you're looking for the clean pair of gym shorts or the clean, you know, exercise shirt, you just say, you know what, I don't have time to do this. Set it all up so that you can do it. She went and interviewed, as part of her study of this, lots of high achievers, scientists, business people, Olympic athletes, and they all kind of said the same thing. Even if you're an Olympic athlete, sometimes you don't want to go do the right thing. Even if you're a high-powered, well-paid business person, sometimes you don't want to make the you don't want to do the presentation or write the memo. She said, a lot of these people say to themselves, I'm just going to do the first step. I'm going to go to the gym, but I don't need to do every exercise and have a maximum effort day. I just need to show up and do a couple things I like to do. Because what happens is, once you're at the gym, you just think, well, I'm here. I might as well do what I normally do. I might push myself hard. I don't have to go to the track and do the normal sprints. I can just do a little bit. So that's willpower is overrated. physical distance from the things that would tempt you, she writes, create psychological distance. So put yourself in a setting to succeed, and don't forget to turn on your 401k, for crying out loud.
Charles is in.
Get that 3%
annual advice. Happy New Year, Charles.
We'll
thank you very much.
Story out. Happy
we'll,
New Year.
We'll
to
talk
everybody.
To you again in 2026. I am glad that I'm done wrestling for the microphone for this year anyway. I'm done wrestling with him over the microphone. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeffers, what's coming up next? The Rich Eisen Show will be airing from 11 until 2. Jeffrey Wright and Company with Tim Murray today. George and Connor hosting the Gabe Kuhn Show.
We will be back tomorrow because that's just who we are, man. Grinders. We're grinders. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day. For now, work is done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at RingCentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.